Hello and welcome to the Weekside Podcast. I'm Jenny Brentis, joined here in studio by Connor Orr. We're recording a little after 3 p.m. on Tuesday, which means that news just broke that the Panthers have fired coach Ron Rivera, a move that we thought would happen at the end of the season. This is a little earlier than we expected. It certainly didn't seem like it was a certainty either. Obviously, the Panthers are coming off a tough loss to Washington this past weekend, but of course, one game doesn't determine anything. And it seemed like this team is kind of in the verge of a transition. Cam Newton's future is uncertain. This was Ron Rivera's ninth season with the team. But he has had a lot of success there, led the team to a Super Bowl, had a double-digit win season just 2 years ago. So clearly they're, you know, just looking towards a new chapter. Dave Tepper, this was his second year at the helm of the team, so sort of take some time to figure things out and sort of now lead the team in a new direction. But I think the question is, where do you think the Panthers go from here? Was it they want an offensive coach, as seems to be the trend league-wide? Did they think that Rivera was a bad fit? What's your take on it, Connor?
He always, to me, seemed like he was teetering on that John Harbaugh scale, where it's like, is he an ideal head coach and someone that you just have to deal with some of the valleys, or is he just a little too underwhelming, you know, or too underperforming that you need to make a change? And it seems like he's just, you know, on the other side of that, because if you're an owner, I understand the temptation to want to make a change, but, you know, Carolina's had some great years. You mentioned they made a Super Bowl. His defenses have always been pretty good. They've developed the talent that they've drafted. He weathered a kind of chaotic Dave Gettleman injection into their life there. So, you know, I think a lot of the things that he did were really good there. He was certainly a fixture in the Carolina community, definitely really well loved there as a head coach. So it's interesting. I mean, do you hire the next person not knowing what's going to happen with Cam Newton? And that's, you know, that could be a big, vast gap in different schemes that you might be trying to run or different people's ideas of your roster. And, you know, the timing of it, too, is a little puzzling for me, right? Because we've seen moves that are made just before the holidays. I think it was when Jacksonville let go of Gus Bradley. They said it was specifically so he could spend the holidays with his family and not worry about the lingering, you know, whatever doomsday scenario, which it was kind of weird.
Wow, right? I don't remember that actually.
Yeah, it was. I remember that like being part of their statement or something that was like, you know, I guess leaked to the people talking on TV that was the reason that they did it then. But the timing here is odd because I guess with Washington already looking for a head coach, maybe Carolina feels the pressure that they need to enter the race already and start talking to people. You know, we've seen our former colleague Mike Garafolo report that Perry Fuel, the interim head coach, is going to get consideration. Maybe they wanted to see him for a little bit of time with these guys to see how he would do. But I don't know. I mean, why do it now? You know, I guess you're not going to win the division. You're probably not going to make the playoffs. But I don't know. The timing of it is a little confusing to me.
Yeah, I think what you said earlier, just to get a jump on the search,
and yeah,
this weekend's loss put them out of the picture, right? It effectively ended the season. So they wait for that to happen and then make the move. And Tepper's statement said they would begin the search immediately. I do think it helps to get a jump on the process. You can obviously talk to coaches who are currently out of work and not with the team. You can start talking about what you're looking for, make outreach to agents without it being this kind of under the table conversation, which happens too much. So in some ways, if you're a head coach, I think you would rather that this happen, right? I mean, of course you want to finish the season, but no one likes hearing rumors, which happens all the time. Rumors that your owner is reaching out to other candidates while you're still the head coach. So prevents that kind of ugly situation. But you said it before too, though. I mean, as reporters interacting with Rivera, you mentioned how active he is in the community, and he's a great person to interact with too.
Yeah.
Every interaction with him, I felt like I learned something.
Sure.
You know, I felt like he treated me with respect. Like I really, you know, a person that I looked forward to interviewing.
I think that, you know, and we were actually just talking about this with a colleague before. I mean, there's always that that knee-jerk reaction to say, well, he's definitely going to get a job in this cycle because he's a good head coach. But I don't think that this is certainly the last that we've heard of Ron Rivera, especially when you have teams like the Giants who value that stability so much, maybe looking for a new head coach. I don't know. He'd be interesting to me in a couple different places this offseason.
Yeah, last year's hiring cycle kind of threw us for a loop, right? Mm-hmm. I thought McCarthy would get a job.
Yeah.
And then he didn't. And then, you know, once a coach is out for a year, you start wondering when they'll get back in. Will they get back in? So it's hard to say with any certainty, but I'm sure he'll draw interest. He'll certainly have interviews. And I agree. I think he could be successful somewhere else.
I think that this is a good chance for David Tepper to flex his muscle as an owner, because do you remember when the Eagles fired Chip Kelly, like around this time, and Jeffrey Lurie's big reason for doing it was he said that I wanted time to talk to every single player before they left the building and ask them what they want in the next head coach.
Mm-hmm.
Here's your opportunity to do that, you know, is to show people that I'm not just going to be this a person who's going to show up every now and then and just act like I'm half involved. You could do something, you know, interesting with this hire. I hope they do, because he's been billed as this sort of fresh blood in the NFL, and not only you know, just thinking about things differently, maybe doing things in a different way. I would love to see him approach the coaching search as a whole with a fresh mindset.
Yeah, as we've seen so many times in January, it becomes this race and the clock is ticking, right? So now you can begin the search without feeling like as soon as you make the move, you're already on the clock. I mean, of course, they'll start beginning things, but there's no urgent pressure. There's no timeline. A lot of candidates you're interested in, you can't even talk to until mm-hmm. the season ends. So you do have this built-in period to get a little bit more of a handle on what exactly you want and hear the feedback from the players. But it'll be interesting to see the direction they go. I think this year's hiring cycle, I feel like there's fewer obvious names, mm-hmm. right, than in past years. And I think, you know, maybe names in places that we didn't necessarily expect. I mean, I think we talked last week, there's going to be some college coaches in the mix for this hiring mm-hmm. cycle for sure. There's going to be some names of people that hadn't really been on the radar before.
Yeah, I think that might make it fun. You know, unfortunately, the league's pipeline kind of dried itself up, I think, over the years. We've talked about this due to just moronic hiring practices and, you know, lack of vision or whatever it is. But this is a chance at least to open it a little bit, or open it up a little bit. And hopefully we see, you know, somebody take a chance. But yeah, I mean, this job, and we're just thinking about this half an hour or less than half an hour actually after it became available, but does it remind you at all of like the Colts job a few years ago before Frank Reich or Josh McDaniels took the job, where they had to take it not knowing what the status of their franchise quarterback was going to be?
And that was a selling point for Reich, apparently, was that he was the only candidate who didn't ask what the status of Andrew Luck would be, which now very apropos for the situation he would soon find himself in, basically saying, I have to be able to take this job without knowing the health of the quarterback. It was like he was very prescient or something, which is actually the word that I lost on in the National Spelling Bee. So every time I say prescient, a little part of me is sad.
I was actually going to ask you about an earlier word choice in that sentence. Did you use apropos? Was that like a little shot at me?
Oh, no, I forgot that was your little gaffe.
Yeah. For those of you who haven't heard this story before, Jenny and I and our former colleague, Jonathan Jones, were out for drinks this summer, and I pronounced it apropos. And Jonathan, the grammar scholar that he is, rightfully pounced on me, and it was a very embarrassing moment, because I like different words, you know, and to butcher that one that badly was really, that hurt.
It's good to have friends that correct you in private so you don't have to talk about it on a podcast that listeners across the country hear. All right, well, we'll move on to news topic number one. Do you want to start with it, Connor?
Let's do it. All right. Wow. It's just so interesting. I mean, we so rarely have breaking news right before.
I know.
We're
scrambling a little
bit. But
we got to push the opener down, maybe hit it later in the show. We don't know, but we're just going to go with it.
We're just going to go on the fly here. But so the Seattle Seahawks, we're recording this on Tuesday afternoon, but on Monday Night Football, laid claim to the number 2 seed with a wild win over the Minnesota Vikings, knocking the 49ers down to the 5th seed. First off, the NFC playoffs are incredibly stacked, and second, despite the Seahawks being viewed as a middling Super Bowl contender by the masses, the real insiders have seen this coming all along. You and I were both really high on this team before the season started.
Did you think that I was going to read news topic number one? And did you want me to read the real insiders have seen this coming all along and then add on that Connor Orr picked the Seahawks to win the Super Bowl? Did I mess up by asking you to start with topic number one?
No, because I feel like that's been my bit where I've set you up for that too many times.
Oh, okay.
You know,
so this is just a little like a tendency change.
I think because
self-scouting
I think
is good.
But before I picked the Seahawks to win the Super Bowl this year, which I did, I actually conferenced that pick with you first.
And I said I loved it.
And you said you loved it.
Yeah.
And so that to me.
That's right. I did say I loved it.
That to me brought it from, you know, just stupid throwaway assignment to I feel really good about this.
I am on board with it. I was on board with it then. I'm on board with it now. The only thing I'm not quite clear on is this Baby Yoda situation, which I asked you about this morning. And it's apparently some movie about the origins of Star Wars.
It's a TV show,
on
Disney Plus.
Okay.
Called The Mandalorian.
Okay.
Now, that's as far as my knowledge. So I'm going to... I think if we have any listeners who are on the fence about this and might think about jumping ship, I have never seen any Star Wars movies. The only Star Wars movie I saw was Episode One, which somebody told me is the worst Star Wars movie. And so it ruined. I was like, if this is stupid and I don't want to watch the rest of them. But now everyone's talking about The Mandalorian. And, you know, so anyway, backtrack. Monday night. Seattle Seahawks super fan, whatever, Twitter persona, Cable Thanos, took the Baby Yoda picture from The Mandalorian and made him look exactly like Russell Wilson, which I thought was hysterical.
Yeah, yeah. It was funny, even not knowing the backstory.
Yeah, so. And then it exploded. Now every Seahawks fan has that as their Twitter avatar, and if you looked at the replies from the NFL account, it was just thousands and thousands of Russell Wilson Baby Yodas in a row replying to the account, which I loved. I thought that was just like beautiful and chaotic, and the Seahawks have now made that their Twitter profile picture as well.
That became last night the most important thing going in your life.
I agree. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't, you know, it's weird. Like, I don't care about a lot of things outside of the obvious things that you're supposed to care about, your family and, you know, your job and everything like that. But everything else that people get excited about, I can kind of, you know, whatever, do away with. But for some reason, like, especially the kitschy things that, you know, are there's another reason why they're doing it, you know. But the Seahawks said, if we can get 40,000 retweets of this by noon, we'll make this their Twitter profile picture. And for some reason, that felt so important to me that that happened. I don't know why. I just love the picture. I just love the little Baby Yoda and the like Russell Wilson. I just like it a lot. I don't know.
And it was big for the Seahawks moving into first place in the division.
Incredible.
Shaking up the standings a little bit there.
The NFC is so deep that the 49ers get knocked down to a 5 seed. Like, that's incredible. We were talking about them as the best team in football for 3 or 4 weeks. And now they, you know, not that they're going to miss the playoffs, but I mean, they might be playing on wild card weekend.
Right. And they went toe to toe with the Ravens. I mean, my takeaway from that game was could have gone either way, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Lamar Jackson converts a third down and then they are able to set up this long field goal by Tucker that not everyone would make, right? So that game was, you know, certainly lived up to expectations and confirmed how good both of these teams are. Now you have the 49ers in wild card position.
Yeah. The Monday night game was interesting because, you know, Mike Zimmer said afterwards that he's not panicking. It's obviously one loss. And I think I agree to some extent. And they did play well. They hung in around that game, especially after Dalvin Cook got hurt. I think they showcased some of the depth on the bottom of that roster below Dalvin Cook. But yeah, I mean, other than the fact that I think it's a statement win for Seattle, I don't know how much it shakes up my perception on the rest of the teams in the NFC at this point.
Yeah, I'm still not sure what to make of both the Packers and the Vikings, if I'm being honest.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I feel like they're not quite at the level of the 49ers and the Seahawks. And, you know, they show good flashes, but then they also disappoint, even though we both, you know, kind of thought that the Packers would beat the 49ers in San Francisco a couple of weeks ago, which was a... But, you know, since then, we've learned the errors of our ways, Connor. We've come a long way since then.
Maybe. We'll see. Well, because I have to make a prediction at the end of the show, and I'm not sure how hot I feel about this one either.
Oh, boy. All right. News topic number two. Cowboys owner Jerry Jones said on Tuesday that head coach Jason Garrett will definitely be coaching in the NFL next year, which is not the same as saying he'll be coaching the Dallas Cowboys. Does this seem like a yikes moment for the old clapper? Or will he find a way to survive? Ooh, clapper. Good.
Isn't that what the people call him? Because he's always clapping.
Always clapping on the sidelines. Yeah. I mean, it's definitely a yikes moment, right? Yeah. Jerry Jones is not saying that by accident. And, you know, what did he say on Thanksgiving Day, right? I'm the biggest Jason Garrett guy that you'll find, but then he kind of put the pressure on, you know, I want him to win a Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. Jerry's getting desperate for a Super Bowl. Every comment he's been making is like, well, would the next guy guarantee us a Super Bowl, or we can't guarantee a Super Bowl? Like, it's just on his tongue all the time, which of course, yes, you're in the NFL, you're an owner, you want to win a championship, but like, Jerry's talking about it a lot.
Yeah.
Like, he's seeming a little desperate at this point.
For sure.
But he makes this comment about Jason Garrett, and you know, I don't think that's any accident.
It's so weird, though, because what was the tail end of his statement on Thanksgiving? It was, I'm a redemption man, and don't you believe in redemption? And then this was, 5 days later? It's like, yeah, probably going to fire the guy. It's really incredible. Right. Like, sometimes, you know, you can't take everything he said. You have to, like, digest bits and pieces of it. But I think that this is the most damning thing that you could point to and say, I 100% think unless they win the Super Bowl, they're making a change.
And I think the Thanksgiving Day loss was embarrassing.
For sure.
You know, obviously Thanksgiving in Dallas is such a big part of the whole tradition. And then I was watching the game at home with my dad, and Jerry Jones gets up and my dad's like, whoa, he's gone. Like, I mean, you know, that was such a, like, you know, didn't even stay till the final seconds of the game. So
I like football on Thanksgiving, you know, because we have a different experience where it's sort of our lives and, you know, we're supposed to be up on all this. And, you know, a lot of your relatives or some of your family are probably just vaguely checking in on the sport after like a 6 week off, like they forgot to set their fantasy leagues and stuff. And, you know, the game is on and they're like, I thought the Cowboys were good, you know, and then so we have to go back to, yeah, they beat the Dolphins and since then it hasn't been that good. And you have to kind of, you know, work around it a little bit. But yeah, I mean, everybody, there are probably people just checking in again and saying, my goodness, like they're losing to the Bills and how is this happening? And yeah, I don't know. I will say this. I think that this is sort of a tangential point. We talked on this podcast last week about the weird names that have been popping up, like Urban Meyer for this job. And if you're Jerry Jones, like, why would you go with a person who like runs a system? And I'm grouping Lincoln Riley and I'm grouping all these people in. Why would you go with a person that is running a system that teams have already figured out or in the process of figuring out how to stop? Right.
Yeah.
Like, and this can, we can loop in Caroline in this discussion or anybody that's hiring a coach this offseason. Like, you know, it's such a fallacy to hire what's popular now because it will be what's unpopular a year from now.
A year,
you know?
Right, because everything cycles out.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, if you really wanted to, your next coach to guarantee you a Super Bowl or come closer to that, is pick someone that's kind of like, you know, up and coming that we haven't already figured the book out on yet.
Well, that's why I'm not so opposed to defensive hires this cycle. This year has been about defense, right? I mean,
totally.
We'll see. You know, we talked about Rivera earlier. Sala will be in the mix. I mean, Eberflus. So there's a lot of different options from the defensive side of the ball. And I don't know. Lost my train of thought.
That's going to be a tough... That's a big hire for Jerry, though, right? I mean, there's been a lot written about, you know, his legacy and what he wants to leave behind and that, you know, his craving of another Super Bowl.
Right.
This is, you know, and you have the quarterback now in his athletic prime. You have probably one more year of Ezekiel Elliott in some form or another in his athletic prime. Your defensive players, your cornerbacks, your wide receivers. You know, if you don't get this thing done in the next 2 years, it's going to be another rebuild, and you're going to have to find a whole new offensive line. Like, that's daunting. That's something that's going to take another 7 or 8 years to get to this point.
Absolutely, and I think that feeds into how ticked off Jerry is, because he feels like he's built up this roster where they should be better than they are. They should be running away, in his mind, with a trash division, historically bad division. Yeah. And he's paying a bunch of guys. He's going to pay Dak. I mean, there's just a lot of reasons, I think, that feed into sort of the sense of urgency that you articulated well. Before we move on to the next topic, can I just share my favorite Thanksgiving Day football comment from my father?
Yes.
So it's pointing out to him that, you know, the Lions are on their third string quarterback, and we're kind of watching the game. A couple series later, he goes, "Is Chicago playing their starter?" Which was just like an unintentional but like pretty spot on assessment of what Bears fans are thinking of Mitch Trubisky right now.
What was your favorite Thanksgiving meal, part of the meal?
Mom, this is sort of a different spin. My mom makes a really good potato salad, and that was excellent. So
it's like a German style potato salad, or like a regular potato salad?
Just like a regular potato salad. You know,
but it hit the spot.
It really hit the spot. Nice. How about you, Connor?
My grandmother makes everything was great. My dad's taken over the turkey. I thought he did a really great job this year. Really stepped up in a big spot. My grandmother just makes a dessert where it's just you take graham cracker crust, you know, and you put it at the bottom of a pan, and then you just make instant butterscotch pudding, Jell-O butterscotch pudding, and you just throw it over the top of it, and you freeze it. It's just unbelievable.
That sounds great.
It's the best part of my Thanksgiving every year.
Well, now I'm craving whatever that is.
She called it butterscotch delight.
Oh, sounds fantastic. Sounds fantastic.
All right. Six teams can clinch a playoff berth this weekend. The Ravens, the Bills, the Chiefs, the Patriots, the 49ers, and the Seahawks. The Saints have already clinched a playoff berth. Out of these, what is kind of your Super Bowl top four, top three at the moment, if you have one? And do you feel that this field is more wide open than in years past, given what we've seen maybe from the Patriots in recent weeks? Or do you feel like it's still kind of, I only think one or two teams can actually win this thing?
I think it's wide open, which I think is exciting, because it's felt a little boring. Mm-hmm. Well, maybe in the AFC. You know, I mean, last year we knew for a lot of the season, right, that it would be Patriots, Chiefs. Although the Patriots, as usual, would have you believe otherwise. But yeah. So right now, so I'm picking four, two from each division.
Yeah.
I'm picking the Ravens. I'm picking the Patriots, even though I would say I do have more doubts this year than in past years.
I think it's a trap.
A trap. All right, Connor. I am picking the 49ers and the Seahawks.
I love
it. Leaving out the Saints. Yeah.
I totally agree with you.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's perfect. I had the Vikings going very far in my preseason picks, which I still kind of like. So maybe I would sub out one of those teams for the Vikings. I still think that they could do something special. I don't know. I'm still not sold on the 49ers, like a little bit. Mm-hmm. But I will say, this is crazy to me that I was down in Baltimore for the game this past weekend, and just a great game to be at. I love the weather and the elements that created. But how interesting it is to watch how Kyle Shanahan does game plan for some stuff. Like, I'm sitting there and I'm just kind of jotting down what's happening, and I realize, like, he's throwing at Marcus Peters, one of the best cornerbacks in football, on almost every play. And why is that? And why is it sometimes Marcus Peters isn't playing well and Kyle Shanahan just knows that, or he's out of position? And, you know, you go into a game with a mindset of, it's sloppy out, but I'm still going to attack one of the best cornerbacks in football and be successful. I don't know. It was interesting. I hadn't looked at something like that in depth as much this season, and it impressed me a little bit. I do think I walked away, even though they lost, with a better opinion of them than I've had in the past.
Same, yeah.
Sources say on this show that I called them paper tigers. I don't remember that. But
I have a fuzzy memory of that as well. But I agree with you. Even in a loss, I thought this was maybe the most impressive game we'd seen from them, because it was across the country in crummy conditions, went toe-to-toe with them. I don't know. I I came away very impressed with both teams. I don't know that I would have said the 49ers in my top four a week ago.
Yeah. And Jimmy Garoppolo, I mean, again, played well in the elements there. I think their receivers really impressed me, where it's not really a group that has a ton of name recognition, but definitely more athleticism and talent than they've been given credit for. I don't know. So
sets up a postseason storyline about the anonymous receiver group, you know, clamoring for some credit. Seems like we get that often, right?
Just get me, you know, like all of this, all of these non-Patriots storylines just feel so fresh to me. And, you know,
yeah.
Imagine just going into the Super Bowl with a blank slate, you know, and this is obviously first world problems, right? We get to cover the Super Bowl.
No, but
we should not complain.
You know,
about
the last few years, it's you're really, you know, because you have a story list, you have some things down for if the teams are going deep into the playoffs, you have, you know, you kind of have a list of story ideas that would be good playoff story ideas. Or in the past, we've done a Super Bowl road trip where we've driven through hometowns and stopped at places. And planning for a Super Bowl road trip every year when you're like, okay, which Patriots hometown have we not visited in the last like 6 years? So, you know, some fresh storylines could be interesting.
Although, like I said, and I tweeted this the morning after they lost to the Texans, this is a trap. I feel like this is a trap. And I don't know. There's just always this period of adjustment and temporary discord that is blown up because they're the Patriots, and then they just somehow use that as fuel to power through the playoffs, and I'm not falling for it this year. I'm not falling for it.
I think the reason I'm more concerned is because of the injuries on the offensive line and because there isn't something that I can like easily see being a spark for the offense.
True.
Those are my concerns.
And Houston, I mean, you double Julian Edelman and then there's nothing, you know? It's really kind of interesting how that works. But I don't know. I'm going to put my blinders on. Me and BB are just going to see you guys in Miami. That's it. You know, that's all I got to say about that.
All right. News topic number four. Giants owner Steve Tisch said that decisions on the Giants' future are coming at the end of the season, which is a lot like describing water as wet, or water as some variation of blue. Do you think their typical end-of-season meeting of the minds will actually yield any interesting changes, or do you think the Giants will be wary of firing another coach so soon? I think they've got to move on from Shurmur, and I think they will.
Yeah.
I think it would be hard to sell him coming back for another season. His first 2 years have been, the biggest measure for how to evaluate, right, is Daniel Jones's development this year. And we haven't seen a clear indication of his development this year. We haven't seen that he's headed in the right direction. So I think that is a big indictment on Shurmur, obviously his record. And I don't think the excuse making plays well. I don't think it plays well in the media,
yep.
But I also don't think it plays well with John Mara. I don't think he needs to hear that his team is historically young. And we talked about this on the Monday morning podcast, but like any owner that hears his coach complaining about the roster is going to say, well, hey, Brian Flores' roster is worse and he has more wins than you. So
yeah.
I thought that really fell flat and was a picture of a coach that was scrambling. And I think that just made it all worse.
You know, what's really interesting is Daniel Jones is third in the league in dropped interceptions. So interceptions that would have happened if the cornerback didn't drop
That's an interesting stat.
So combine that with the fact that, like, you know, because that was really what Shurmur was hanging his hat on, right? Was like, at least he's kind of getting there, you know, not as bad as we all thought he was. And then oddly, like this weekend, he said that it was good that he threw interceptions because they weren't fumbles, which was his other problem. But just a weird place for them to be in right now, I think. But if I'm the Giants, I think the bigger, broader discussion is, do you get rid of the GM too? Because, you know, are you going to let Gettleman have a big say in the next guy like he did in this guy? Is another coach going to want to work with him because he's got a very sort of unique vision on how to build a roster? Are you going to let him, like Jerry Reese, spend a lot of salary cap money in a position where he might be inclined to spend more of it to save his job? I don't know. I think there's a lot of things that if I'm John Mara, I'm really nervous about right now.
Yeah. I think they've whiffed on two head coach hires now. And you have to get the best guy in this cycle. The guy that you believe is the best guy in the cycle. And to do that, I don't think you can have a GM in place. That's how I feel.
Yeah. Do you think that they would ever go outside? Because this is like, it would be unprecedented for our sort of lifetime, right?
Yeah.
Do you think that they would step outside of that bubble? And, you know, it's not like, you know, even beyond Gettleman, there's probably a candidate or two in-house that they would probably ideally have viewed as a successor, a Kevin Abrams or someone like mm-hmm. that. I mean, you know, does this interrupt all those plans that they probably have at some point?
You're right. I mean, they're so kind of... They do things the same way all of the time. Mm-hmm. So it's sort of hard to imagine them breaking out of that. But this has been a really frustrating stretch. And John Mayer wears it all over his face. And, you know, I think they'd be inclined to do whatever they can to feel like they can fix it. I think they've got to be at this point. I think they've got to be willing to break their ways or their whatever their criteria for hiring a coach has been in the past. I think they've got to be willing to change it.
Do you, you know, Jason Garrett was a name that
right,
was mentioned, obviously,
right.
And that would be falling back into the way that they've always done things, is taking a guy with Giants ties and making sure everybody. But if you're a head coach, let's say that they do decide to start all over and fresh, and new GM, new head coach, new relationships. Are you wary at all of going into something that is completely uncertain to you? Because if I'm a head coach, I'm nervous about everything because I'm always nervous about everything. But I'm thinking,
same.
If this is at all not good, if I start off bad, isn't there immediate inclination going to be to snap back into what they always do and say, well, the mistake was straying from the plan. We got to get someone that's been an assistant GM back here, or bring Jerry Reese back, whatever it is. And we got to get an old Giants head coach back here. We got to bring everybody back. And then, you know, I don't know. I mean, are you nervous about that tendency in an owner?
Well, perhaps, but then again, they're not going to be so willing to make yet another change, right? I mean, they're just going to keep striking out. That strays even farther from what their plan has always been. I don't know. It's going to be there's a lot of things that have to fall into place. I mean, we don't know Brady's future beyond this season. Mm-hmm. We don't know what's going to happen with Brady and the Patriots, and therefore McDaniels. We also don't know. I mean, there's a lot of interesting pieces to fall into place here. I mean, Saban has always been rumored as, you know, the one they want. Do they make a run at him now? I'm just throwing out some wild names to add spice to the podcast here, Connor.
I would love that.
If we can't get Bill, what's the next best thing?
Yes.
I don't know. I'm just throwing a lot of stuff out.
And you've written some required reading on the subject for John Mayer, so hopefully he can check that out, you know, the history of Bill Belichick and Nick Saban's friendship, which definitely, if you're John Mayer and you're listening to this podcast, first of all, you know.
He definitely is. Hello, John.
Hello.
Hope everything's well.
Second of all, yeah, happy holidays.
Happy holidays.
Of all, read Jenny's article. It's very good. So I'm going to pull like a little bit of an audible here because we have two potential topics for the fifth topic.
Okay.
So we would either talk about the Patriots or the Jaguars. You're Patriots. I'm Jaguars. Let's do one rock, paper, scissors.
Okay, got it.
All right, ready? Rock, paper, scissors, shoot. Oh, try.
Both, we do it paper.
Both on paper. All right. Rock, paper, scissors, shoot. All right.
All right. You win. I was paper. Connor was scissors.
So I'm Jaguars, right? Isn't that what I just said?
Yeah. You're Jaguars. But like if you win, does that mean that it's your pick or does losing mean that? Well, I don't know. Well, go with Jaguars, Connor. We didn't set the guidelines there.
Okay. But also as a condition of my winning that, I would like you to read the fifth topic because I really enjoyed writing this one.
Oh boy. All right. It would have been a shame to miss these puns. The Jaguars are benching Nick Foles and setting themselves up for a disastrous cap situation in 2020, as well as a very strange roster for a possibly new coach and or GM to inherit. Once the apex predators in their respective jungle, these cats are now just trying to find a way to perfect their next rebuild. Oh, man. Let's this linger. Let these puns have their moment. Give you the proper credit.
This is the moment credit
for your brilliance.
You need to flex your muscle and take me off the responsibility of writing
never,
the show notes.
Never. I could never replace you.
Oh, man.
I love the use of apex predators. Also because I went to Mean Girls on Broadway, and Regina George is the apex predator. So they have the whole song, Apex Predator, Apex Predator. It's a great song.
How close is that aligned with the movie?
It's pretty close, yeah. Like, some lines are exactly the same. There are some departures, but I found it fantastic.
Mean Girls, this is sort of like a weird bit of or trivia. So I always have had trouble sleeping, always. And so one of my best friends to this day, but in high school, also said, you know what I do? Is I watch the same movie before I go to while I'm going to sleep every night, because by the time, the fifth time you're watching it, becomes so boring that your body just shuts down and you go to sleep because you don't want to watch it anymore. And at the time, we were on a really big Mean Girls kick. So I probably watched that like 10 or 11 nights in a row or whatever.
That's amazing.
Like that. It's a fall asleep movie.
So you know all the lines.
Yeah.
That's great. So the full situation, there's not really a good transition here, unless you could come up with some Mean Girls-esque line.
Nick Foles once wore army pants and flip-flops, so the next day I wore army pants and flip-flops.
Wow. Connor, all right. You really do know all the lines. You're amazing. What's interesting about this situation was this offseason, the Jaguars are really betting against themselves with Foles. Like, the contract was a little bit of a surprise just because what else was the market?
Yep.
So they kind of backed themselves into this situation.
Yeah.
And they gave him a contract that was probably bigger than they needed to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And wow. I mean, it's just like a really crazy situation, because would you have been better off just trusting what you had? Or I don't know. I mean, it would have been really interesting to see the negotiations there. Was Nick Foles saying, you know, I'd rather just stay in Philadelphia and be here for Carson or whatever it was? I mean, what was the leverage point that was luring him away from Jacksonville? Because like you said, once Joe Flacco landed in Denver, and Case Keenum went to Washington, that was it. I mean, there was no other vacancies open right there. That was the last one.
Yeah, it's kind of stunning, because now going into this offseason, as you wrote recently, there's going to be a lot of quarterback question marks. And last year, the story was how settled everything was at the quarterback position.
Yeah.
So a pretty wild swing. But the Jaguars, the out in the contract was really after 2 years. So now they're in a situation where the cap hit would be sizable. They could lessen it somewhat if it was a post-June 1st release. I don't know how much of a trade market there would be for Foles. That would be their best option, but could they find someone to take on him and the contract? I'm skeptical about that.
Yeah, someone was suggesting they would basically have to pull an Osweiler, right, and get rid of him, and you know, basically pay someone the pick just to take him off their hands. You know, and maybe a team would do that, because that is becoming a more popular maneuver for teams that want to acquire draft picks. But still, I mean, man, to think about where they were at the beginning of the season, to think about where they were 4 weeks ago when Orr predicted them as our late season charge team.
Oh, you did.
God. And here we are.
I picked the Eagles, so I'm also not doing so great.
You know what's weird, though, is I wonder what the inside thought process is there on Foles, because it's really only been like 3 weeks or whatever since he's come back from this injury, 3 or 4 weeks. Why now to do this when, you know, you're not in playoff contention? You probably know you're going to get rid of the coach at the end of the season anyway. I don't know who's pulling the strings there, and that would certainly be an interesting discussion to find out kind of how all these levers are working anyway. But I guess you're saying, let's give Gardner one more chance to show us he's the guy of the future. And if not, why would you be destroying the confidence of the guy who by virtue has to be on your roster next year, almost certainly, you know?
Yeah, I agree with the timing being weird. Based on Marone's post-game comments on Sunday, I did think this was the direction they were going to go. When a coach says he needs to talk to both guys, you think that probably means he's, you know, benching the starter. But I agree with you. He's not that far removed from the injury. Still kind of working his way back to form from that. And so once you give up on him for the rest of the season, then you definitely cast uncertainty about his status for next year for a guy that, as you said, kind of has to be on your roster, or unless you find some creative solution. So I would imagine it's just what you said, to, you know, get a full evaluation on Minshew to inform your decisions moving forward.
Which is so weird, because you're not going to be the ones making the decision, you know?
Right.
But yeah,
right.
I don't know. That's just, it's really strange, you know? I don't know. That's going to be a tough spot for a new coach to come in. And,
yeah.
You know, and I do think that they, you know, there are a lot of teams that do full rebuilds and never have any success. You know, they did the full 4-year rebuild. Mm-hmm. They did make an AFC championship game. I do think that they
almost won it.
And almost won it. Almost beat the Patriots. Yeah. So I do think, I mean, that there were certainly some there was certainly some good out of this that shouldn't be forgotten, but ultimately, you know, you could say it's a cautionary tale against building around a defense. It's a cautionary tale against sticking with a bad quarterback for too long. I think that there's some lessons to be learned there, but certainly, I mean, they're more relevant, or they were more relevant than Jacksonville had ever been since Tom Coughlin left the team.
I mean, you and I started our training camp tour in Jacksonville last year, and it was all the Miles Jack wasn't down shirts and signs and beers around town. Everyone was still bitter about the playoff loss. They felt like they should have beaten the Patriots and gone to the Super Bowl, but that the energy was still there and they could pick up right where they left off, which of course is a tough thing to do, but there was a sense that the team was built to do it, and then everything just flipped around.
Yeah. R.I.P. Jags. It was a good run. You know, it was a good run. All right, Jenny, it's time for the Oracle. And, you know, I was a lot more excited about doing these at the beginning of the season when I had this idea in the back of my head that I was really good at making predictions. We've talked about this. Freddie Kitchens is still the Browns play caller. The Packers didn't beat the 49ers. You could just go every week, and I don't think I've gotten one right yet. The Falcons didn't go on a run and get back to 500 before Thanksgiving. I might be 0-0. Did we start the show in like week 2?
But that's remarkable in and of itself. Maybe our listeners should just start taking what you're saying and do the opposite. Maybe this is the magic of the Oracle, is that you're always wrong.
That's so true. Well, here it goes. Just take note, bettors and fans out there. Dallas and Chicago is Thursday night football this week. I think that Chicago wins this game and Jason Garrett doesn't make it through the weekend.
Ooh.
And here's why.
Okay.
Because a little bit about what we were talking about earlier in the show, where I think that someone gets into Jerry Jones's head now and says, if you want the best candidate, now look, there's two teams that are out there looking for guys. Maybe now we need to sort of cut the line here and we need to start getting involved in all this stuff. So I think he feels the heat. And as a bonus, you get 3 weeks, because everyone's been talking about Kellen Moore and Chris Richard as head coaching candidates, as they should. I think both of them are talented and it will at some point fill those roles for a team. So that's a good chance to see how they would run without Jason, too. You get 3 weeks in a hot spot. You're still, you know, in the playoffs. You know, you're still in contention. It would certainly be interesting, right? Like, has a head coach of a first-place team ever been fired right before the playoffs? I don't know. But
right, that would be precedent-setting. So basically what the listener should take away from this is that the Cowboys are going to beat the Bears and everything will be status quo moving forward.
Yeah, I think that's the major takeaway here. We're gonna cut all these up and at the end of the season just have a really good laugh about this. And then I'll try to get better in 2020. God willing, if they let me do this podcast again, I don't know. But we're going to get to my favorite part of the show coming up. And we have an absolute banger of a topic for Jenny's Vrentis Consensus. I'm so excited about this. We've been arguing about this in the office all day long. So I'm excited to see where it leads us. But first, we're just going to take one more quick break.
All right, now back to the Vrentis Consensus. This one truly is a consensus, Connor, because if you don't agree with this opinion, then I don't know what to tell you.
Mm-hmm.
I think everyone by now has seen the Peloton commercial where the man gifts his fit wife a Peloton. It doesn't appear to be something that she's asked for. She appears to be incredibly surprised by this, so much so that, in fact, the first time she goes on a Peloton ride, she's nervous, doesn't seem to be an avid spinner who would have, say, been, you know, requesting this as her Christmas gift for a while. She puts together a video of all of these times that she rides. She seems surprised when Grace in Boston gets called out. So just really painting, or shouted out during the class, really painting a picture of Grace in Boston as being this, like, desperate for validation type of woman. And then at the end, she shows the husband she didn't realize how much this would change her life in a year. She shows him the video, and again, she looks at him for approval.
Yeah.
So my main issue with this is really the presentation of this woman who needs the man in her life or the Peloton instructor to basically tell her what path she should be on, to encourage her, to validate her, and really sends a lot of negative message, I would say, to viewers. And I don't really think there's any other interpretation of this commercial. The spoof of it that was done by Eva Victor on Twitter.
So funny.
I probably watched it like 20 times on Monday night because it was so spot on.
So funny.
And a hidden, what word am I looking for?
Easter
here?
Egg? Is
maybe,
it?
Maybe a hidden Easter egg. A hidden point to make. Colleague Priya Desai pointed out that it's not even healthy to be spinning 5 straight days in a row.
That's true.
That this is not good for you. This can cause injuries. And so she's bragging 5 days in a row, and maybe that's not even good for your joints. So just a lot of flaws in the commercial. And I would encourage people who are, not that a Peloton is a bad gift, but just make sure that, you know, your wife wants it, or your partner wants it, or your significant other who's not your wife. Lots of other family structures to consider here, other than the man gifting the wife a Peloton so she can work at home with the child doing homework at the kitchen table.
It's such a picture of current American society, right? Where this distant husband with $2,000 to throw around, like, thinks zero about this Christmas present until the last minute and just says, here's an exercise bike. Like,
shower me in praise.
When I first saw it, I was so blown away that I began assembling, which is what I do from time to time. You know, I started watching the video, and you assemble little sort of memeable moments from it.
Oh, man.
And I was starting to prepare some jokes. And then, you know, I was going to debut everything on Monday Night Football. I had like a bunch of Peloton bits ready to go for Monday Night Football because this is prime time.
Yeah.
But the wave hit this on Thanksgiving weekend, and I got crushed. I was in 90th place, you know?
The silver lining to all of this is just how swift the backlash was.
Surprised it's still on the air.
I'm surprised it's still on the air, too. Well, you know, they spent a lot of money in the commercial, and the people who thought of the idea probably still think it's good. But it was somewhat pleasing to see how much people raged against the entrenched stereotypes that were confirmed by this commercial. That made me happy.
I just wonder what conversation in the boardroom happened where they said, let's make the woman on this stationary bike seem so scared of everything. Like, you know, she seems like a confident, functional person that can, you know, a stationary exercise bike should not be intimidating to anybody, you know. And she's like, well, I'm nervous. I don't know what's going to happen. Like, you're going to be fine, you know. Why are we painting this person this way?
Absolutely.
It's ridiculous.
Absolutely. That was the biggest flaw of the commercial. But just really overall, it was a failure on a lot of levels.
This is the new, you know what this is? It is the new millennial version of that old commercial trope where it's just like, get the wife some pearls and she'll love you. You know what I mean?
But we still have a lot of those, unfortunately.
We do,
too. We've still got Kay Jewelers, you know, pumping those out every Christmas. So,
that's true.
You know, there's really not a lot of inclusivity in our ads, Connor.
Which is the biggest fallacy, I think, in modern advertising is the idea that a piece of jewelry is going to totally blow someone away. I think you just grow up with that in the back of your mind. And then I remember like being 16 or whatever and having to buy like my first significant other Christmas present.
Another humble brag about that he had a girlfriend at age 16. We're just slip that
I don't
in.
View it that.
I was dating at an early age and I had to buy my girlfriend a necklace from...
It was a pair of earrings from the Piercing Pagoda at the mall.
Wow, Connor.
They were $35. And at the time, that was not an insignificant amount of money. You know, that was like, you know,
I would say that's significant. Yeah.
I was caddying at the time.
Wow.
That was my main source of income. And so that was a day. That was a day's wages, basically. It was $35. And so you go to the, and you don't want your parents to think that you have a girlfriend, so you have to get a ride to the mall from somebody else. You have to go up to the piercing pagoda lady. You have to pick out the earrings. You have to come home. You have to hide the box. And then you have to, you know, there was a lot of stress involved in this, but in the back of your mind, for years you've been told in all these commercials, jewelry is just going to blow this person's mind, and it's going to be the greatest thing ever. And it's kind of like, yeah, you know, I already have earrings that I wear, and these are, you know, in the nicest way possible. I learned later that very cheap earrings can be painful and cause infections.
Or allergies.
You can be allergies
to the metal, yeah.
Yeah, so.
Jewelry, Lexuses, Pelotons, just all in the no category for the holidays.
You know what people want for Christmas is just to say, you know, thanks. Thanks for everything. You're great. You know, and that's it.
Thanks, Connor. You're great. You're a great co-host.
You're great too. Yeah, and that's it. No Peloton.
This is really the Brentish consensus. Tell the people in your life, Shelby, you're great.
Shelby's great. All of our listeners are great. It's been a great we still have a couple more shows left to do. The NFL season is not close to over, but thank you for sticking with us this week.
The MMQB Weekside Podcast is me, Jenny Vrentis, and Connor Orr. We are produced by Shelby Royston. SI's executive producer of podcasts is Scott Brody. Ben Eagle is director of editorial projects and product. Mark Moravik is emeritus executive director of the MMQB. They're all great. Keep up with our entire lineup of podcasts 5 days a week by subscribing to the MMQB NFL Podcast for free on Apple Podcasts. And while you're there, please do us a favor and leave us a rating and review. It really does help other people find the show, which is also available on Spotify, Radio.com, Stitcher, SI.com, and wherever else you listen to podcasts.